This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Today on the On Enquirer podcast, let's talk more about that huge Illinois basketball victory over Ford Atlantic, shall we? Michael Tulip, our On Enquirer basketball analyst, joins us shortly to give his thoughts on Marcus Domask, huge game, what his emergence over the weekend in New York City / New Jersey means for the Illini, and what he's seen offensively, what's changed for them, and what does this win mean for the Illini. We'll talk about that, and we'll look ahead to another top 25 showdown at Tennessee, number 17 in the country. They're looking for a win. They are hungry for a win after losing three straight to top 10 opponents. They've had a very, very difficult schedule so far. They had an impressive win at Wisconsin earlier this season. It's a really good team. It's a veteran team. It's a physical team. So even though they've lost to some very, 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 very good teams, this will be another great opportunity for Illinois, another great test for them. Michael Tua breaks it all down. But before that, there has been a little bit of football news since the last time we chatted, like right after I posted the podcast. We saw Taz Nicholson decide to enter the transfer portal. And I'm not too surprised. This was a tough year for Taz. He led all FBS defenders in penalties. He was good in coverage when he did not commit penalties. Very feisty, but obviously a big piece of that 2022 team. I know he was probably the fifth defensive back there, but he still made a huge contribution. And when he left and was hurt late in that season, you could tell, right? Like, when he was absent, Illinois struggled a little bit more in the secondary because teams attacked that guy. But he obviously had some struggles this year, and this might just be the best case for both parties, just to look elsewhere. Illinois was obviously looking for upgrades regardless at cornerback, and I think Taz Nicholson could use a fresh start elsewhere. So hopefully in his final year he can have some success, because this year was a really tough year for him. But this puts more pressure on Illinois to land more defensive backs. I think, and I've said it on this podcast, outside of Xavier Scott, I don't think any starter should feel confident that he's going to be a starter in the secondary returning. So, and I included Taz into that. So this staff needs to hit on some DB transfers, and DB's already been a big need. They have been very busy in the portal offering defensive backs. Chase Canda, a JUCO kid whose brother Channing Illinois recruited and offered last year, is now at TCU. He's a really athletic DB, can play nickel or corner. Does Xavier Scott move to corner and allow you to play someone like Chase Canada, who's visiting this weekend? But they also got to add more. Zach Toby has to develop. Sabour Kareem, Jaheim Clark have to develop. So while Taz Nicholson, I think even by his own admission, did not play as well as he imagined, Illinois still has to replace him. He was a starter the last 2 years. So, some people reacted, oh, Illinois is better for this. Yeah, if they replace him. And if they get somebody who can be better than he was last year, or they develop somebody, and that's on the staff to do now moving forward. Sed McConnell enters the transfer portal, a guy who's in the rotation this year, a guy Terrence Jamison was excited about entering the year and did play a part in this rotation, but he was probably the sixth defensive lineman and really towards the end of the season did not play much. Part of that was because the guy in front of him, Johnny Newton, rarely came off the field and is going to be a consensus All-American, which is amazing. Illinois back-to-back years, consensus All-Americans on defense. They haven't done that since I think Kevin Hardy and Simeon Rice and Dana Howard were all on defense. So it's been a long time since that's happened. But, Sed McConnell, is a loss because he was somebody you were expecting to potentially be part of the rotation, but I didn't expect him to be the no-doubt starter. And I thought if he was the no-doubt starter, that might be an issue because I think Illinois is expecting Sed McConnell to take a big leap this year, and I didn't necessarily see that. I think we could all see that when, you know, the second-string defensive line came in, we all expected a drop-off, but it was a little bit bigger than I think even Illinois expected. I thought Bryce Barnes played pretty well in the rotation, another guy they have to replace. But the turnover you're having on the defensive line is pretty insane here. You know, five of your top six guys are on their way out with Johnny Newton, Keith Randolph, and Denzel Daxon all gone, Bryce Barnes gone, and now Sed McConnell. So there's a huge makeover in that defensive line room, and that remains, for me, the top need on this team. Clay Patterson was a really good start, the transfer out of Yale. I think he's going to play that three technique. Won't be Johnny Newton. I talked about that in the last podcast, but I think he's going to be a really solid starter at the worst, and I think he could be pretty good. T'Rae Edwards at nose tackle, feel confident in him being part of that. But then you're counting on Alex Bray and Jeremiah Warren to play big roles in their second year, but most likely Illinois's going to have at least two more guys here. You could potentially have three more. That would make me feel a lot more comfortable and confident if you added three more guys to that rotation. But they need another nose tackle. And they offered a JUCO kid here recently that I think could potentially play that role for Illinois. They offered Xavier Stillman, who I think could play nose, maybe could play some three technique, but big physical guy. They've offered a lot of defensive line transfers here recently. So I think any Sledge out of Auburn could potentially be that nose tackle that Illinois could use. And a guy who's very highly ranked, highly recruited out of high school. Illinois was in on him the first time around. He could be a significant addition. They offered Taurean Carter out of Arkansas. Had a pretty good 2021, but then missed the entire 2022 season. Came back last year, played a rotational role for an Arkansas team that wasn't all that good. But if he can bounce back from injury, maybe he's a guy who can make an impact. Illinois offered him. Ashen Shepard is another guy, East Mississippi. I think he'd be kind of the Keith Randolph role. I watched some film of him. He's got some really good length and athleticism. I do think he needs to add strength. And I just don't know if he's the guy that automatically back, no doubt starter, going to make a huge impact day one. He's got a couple years of eligibility left, but I do think he can help and replace a guy like McConnell, potentially be an upgrade over McConnell. But Illinois needs two or three more defensive linemen in this class in the transfer portal. And then you look at offensive line. They certainly need more there, and they need a tackle. Probably going to look for a guard who can improve depth as well. And we'll see who they're able to get there. They've offered plenty of offensive linemen. Remington Strickland, a guard out of Texas A&M. Another guy to watch, I think, would be Kevin Wigginton, who started a lot of games at Michigan State, and Illinois seems to have an in there. So we'll see if they're able to land a guy like that. Luke Newman out of Holy Cross at Illinois is in the mix with a bunch of other schools. And they're looking at a lot of prospects right now. So I'm really interested to see who emerges among those offensive line targets. I feel confident they'll land guys there. Defensive line, they is still the biggest need for me because I feel like Illinois has got some guys who could play on the offensive line. Defensive line, they just don't have numbers there. They don't have a lot of experience there. So if I'm ranking these, they're both huge needs. But if I'm ranking these, I still have defensive line ahead. But tight end has moved up the list because Tip Ryman is entering the NFL draft. I honestly thought he could come back for another year. But Tip has shown, and he's drawn a lot of NFL interest. I don't know if it's to the point that he's a certain NFL draft pick, but he accepted a bid to the Shrine Bowl. He's got time here to still come back if he wants. But the way Illinois is recruiting tight end transfers now, it seems like Tip Ryman's on his way out. And that's a big loss because this guy played three quarters of your snaps on offense. He's the best blocker they had of the bunch, and he's the most productive receiver. And I thought if he came back next year, maybe he could take another leap to about 30 catches at tight end. But I do think they have some guys in Tanner Arkin and Henry Boyer who could take another step and be physical, good blockers next year. I think Henry Boyer has a massive potential as a blocker. And Tanner Arkin kind of stole his role late in the year. So I think you saw good things from him. What they could really use at that position is a more proven dynamic receiver. Somebody who can stretch the seam, somebody who can be reliable as a pass catcher. And kudos to Tip Ryman. I did think he took a big step there. I thought he could have been targeted more, to be honest with you, especially early in the year. But Illinois offered a couple guys at tight end the last couple days. Tanner Kojal out of Ball State. He played, he's an Illinois native, played at Nazareth Academy and Mount Vernon, Lake Park as well. He's got 2 years of eligibility left. At Ball State, he had 69 receptions for 668 yards and 10 touchdowns the last 2 years. And he played for Ball State, and his year with John Paddock was pretty good. So John Paddock can vouch for him. They've also offered Tyler Neville out of Harvard, who's gotten a bunch of offers, 6'4", 235. One more year of eligibility for him. He had 62 receptions for 698 yards and 8 touchdowns over the last 2 years. And there's a lot of other tight end possibilities. Bauer Sharp, great name, out of Southeast Louisiana. I think they got a good sell for that. I think they can find somebody who can contribute, but they certainly would need somebody like Boyer and Arkin to take steps up. So it's going to be really interesting to see who they get to visit this weekend. I will say transfer recruiting is a little bit more under the radar. The teams like to keep things a little bit more under the radar. The players don't talk as much. We didn't learn until very late in the process. I didn't learn Tommy DeVito was visiting until I saw him at an Illinois basketball game a couple of years ago. Didn't learn until after the visits that Hudson Card and Luke Altmaier had visited. So these things are kept a little bit more hushed. It's a little bit more business-like with the approach here. I don't know quite to the Shohei Ohtani type silence, but it is more like that with a lot of these. So it's going to be interesting to see who visits this weekend, but certainly these next 2 weekends are going to be huge for Illinois in its efforts to improve its 2021 and 2022 roster. The last thing I want to say, Illinois is doing a really good job of getting their prep guys on campus immediately, because just talking with a bunch of these prospects so far, I have 11 of the 17 prep commits set to early enroll at Illinois. I think that's huge. And Brett Bielema has made that an absolute priority. He has encouraged these guys to do it if they're able to do it, if they want to do it. And to get 11 of the 17 coming in, including Andrew Dennis, offensive lineman, Eddie Turk, a lineman, Demetrius John, a defensive lineman, Angela McComb, a defensive lineman. I think it's really important for those guys to get a head start. Plus your quarterback and Trey Petty. I think for those guys, it is so, so important. But Easton Baker, linebacker, I know everyone's a fan of his and his highlight video. I think he can make a contribution on special teams. Joe Barna, who's going to play the edge, eventually could probably play defensive line, but he's going to start that outside linebacker position. Vernon Woodward, who is among my favorite prospects, a defensive back out of Florida, getting here early. Tyshawn Griffin getting here early. Josiah Knight, a really good edge rusher, high ceiling guy, getting in here. The one guy I really would like to get in here early would be Khalil Valentine, running back. He's not going to be able to get here till June, but he's a guy I think can contribute right away. I think we saw last year, like Malik Elsie got here in June, plus he had veterans in front of him, right? That played a role in it. I think those guys are physically ready, but to get in that playbook, to get in the system, to get those reps, I think is really important if you want to make an early contribution. I think it's really important for the offensive line and defensive linemen to get a head start on building their bodies, right? And maybe not being ready to play right away. Maybe Dennis can be a guy who's in the two deep. Brandon Henderson did that last year. But I think getting you ready for your second year to potentially make a big impact, I think that's really important for those offensive linemen and defensive linemen. I think it's what we could see this year. Like, will TJ McMillan and Brandon Henderson getting here early last year, how much does that help them? I think that's going to be interesting to watch. All right, when we come back, let's talk hoops. Michael Tua breaks down the huge win over Ford Atlantic. That's next on the Illini Inquirer podcast. This episode of the Illini Inquirer podcast is presented by Underdog Sports. We see a lot of you are downloading Underdog Sports, using the promo code, and having fun, which we love to see. If you haven't already checked out Underdog Sports, be sure to do so. It's super easy to use. You go on the app, go pick whether favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total than what is listed. For example, Travis Kelce, he's very popular these days. If his number is set at 50 receiving yards, and you know Taylor Swift is in the house, you may feel confident he's going to go way higher than the number. Do that with 2 to 5 different players, and you're in business. If you go 5 for $5, you can 20x your money. So sign up today with promo code Illini and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Visit UnderdogFantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with promo code Illini to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. There are a lot of fantasy companies out there, but we decided to partner with Underdog because it's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Time to catch up with Michael Tulip. Happy birthday, Michael Tulip. How are you, man?
I'm 30.
How's it feel?
But I'm good. I feel like I'm in my athletic prime.
That's
which
right.
Which is great.
This is the peak, Mike. This is what you've been looking forward to the entire time.
I'm just not hitting my stride, man. Facial hair is still awful, but we're getting there. I'll never be one of these. I don't think that's possible, but we're getting there, man.
Yeah, that's never been a problem for me. I was growing this out at like age 20, so then it fell out on top. So that might be the better.
Yeah, it's got to go somewhere, man. You're just reallocating.
That's right. Well, Mike, Marcus Domas certainly hit his peak against FAU. What a phenomenal performance! 33 points. Illinois, huge, impressive win. As he and Shannon each score 33 points, both career highs. We got to start with Marcus Domask. I think we saw a little bit of a breakthrough against Rutgers, got him going a little bit. I mean, he's been good against really good opponents. The low majors, not so much. But I know you didn't have a lot of concerns, but what do you think led to this performance for Marcus Domask?
Well, it was just to put the performance into context, the graphics showed on the screen, but I mean, when you're talking about a top two, and Terrence is in there too, a top two scoring output in the Jimmy V Classic. That's insane, because you think about the teams that get invites to that tournament are elite teams.
Oh, yeah.
Most times. It's a very small field, and those games are typically great games with great opponents. So that alone is impressive. But it is incredible for a few more reasons too. I mentioned the stage, right? The opponent, that's an opponent in FAU. I mean, what would they possibly be scared of coming into? I mean, after what they did in the tournament last year, how they've performed in these high pressure type of games, and they've typically in the past, just with their toughness and strength, they've bullied people. And that's just, you know, Davis, Elijah Martin, that's what they do. They back down guys and get into the paint, and you gave them a taste of their own medicine. But the last part that I'll mention and why that performance was so incredible, the efficiency. I mean, him getting the 33 points on 9 of 21 shooting and shooting 10 free throws is a lot different than 15 of 21 and having two guys score 33 and having it be completely additive. Like, completely additive. And so we'll dive into it a bit more, but the last point, or the really two more points I want to make about Domask. He was feeling himself. And I will give you one instance where I knew he was feeling himself, and it's not when he was doing too small or Jordan shrug or shaking his head after he's making shots. Those are obvious, right? That's when you can see a player and be like, yeah, he feels like he's got it going. It was 76-68. Domask takes a not great three early in the shot clock. Davis comes down, hits a long one, 76-71, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, I don't, I hope Marcus doesn't all of a sudden become gun shy.
Yeah.
Literally the next possession, he's like, F it. They go under again, and he steps right back for three and drains. So, and then, you know, the point that I want to make to tie this all together is that he has a responsibility with his talent and his skill level. You have a responsibility game in and game out for your team and for yourself. And if you don't believe in yourself, or you have this kind of timid nature, like we've seen against some of these go figure, you know, mid-major, low major teams, that's doing your team a disservice. And I'm not even saying that in a way that's hard on the kid, but that's the responsibility you take on as a really good player. Terrence Shannon, you know, think about the Penn State game last year mm-hmm. at home. Terrence was awful. And look what it did to the team. So that's, you know, everyone says they want to be that guy, but this is how you prove it on a nightly basis. And it's not always going to be 15 for 21 from the field, 33 points, but that mindset of no one can guard me out here and I'm still going to make the right play and do the right thing, that goes a long way for this team. There's no question.
Speaking of Terrence Shannon, Mike, last year we talked about, man, this guy is so good. Sometimes does he realize it? He needs to be the alpha, needs to assert himself. He has done that. And now if you can get Domask, 33 is not going to happen maybe once more this season, right? But if you can get Domask giving you 15-plus most nights or frequently, what does that do for Terrence Shannon if Domask can be that regular second option?
Yeah, well, we talked about it the weeks leading up to that game. So for Terrence, I was worried, and I've said it on this podcast before, I was worried that he was going to run himself into the ground.
Yeah,
trying to carry this load. I was really worried about that because his health is priority one for this team. I don't care what anyone says. And I think it's obvious, but it still needs to be stated. But the flurry that Marcus went on in that second half, I mean, he was good in the first half, but in the second half in particular, it's like FAU's guarding him, has no idea what to do with him, and then all of a sudden kind of lying in wait is Terrence freaking Shannon, and then he kind of drops the anvil at the end of the game and takes guys off the dribble and ones and just absolutely broke their spirit. And that tandem is so important because not only just on the offensive side of the ball, but Marcus is good defensively. He uses his strength. He can move his feet. He levels you off. He is not just surviving on the defensive end and is just this offensive talent. And that helps Terrence too, because we've talked about it before, and I want to shout out Ty Rogers. Ty Rogers has been incredible on that end. But you don't want Terrence to feel like he has to guard the best player every night in addition to carrying this offensive load. And the last point that I'll make is all these teams prepare, Big Ten teams, non-conference, they all prepare. You don't want 98% of the scouting report to be Terrence Shannon.
Yeah.
You don't want 98% of what scout team is doing taking away Terrence Shannon's left hand and, hey, this action, we want to blow this up here. Can you divert some attention away from Terrence Shannon for teams that are prepping? And Marcus is doing that. And that is going to help Terrence, one, be able to play within himself more and not feel like he has to shoulder that and take over every single second. And that's huge. That's huge for this team. That's huge for both Marcus and Terrence. And I'm excited to see them continue to be consistent with that, because there's a lot of things that I think have contributed to them getting to this point.
This is probably the two back-to-back on the East Coast here, the two best offensive games we've basically seen from Illinois. And the stat I'll bring up, Mike, the last five games, Illinois has averaged 42 two-point attempts, 23 threes. First three games, Illinois averaged 31 twos, 27 threes, almost even there. What's changed? Is that the biggest change? What have you seen about why the offense has been effective the last couple games, besides just Marcus Domask going on a heater?
Well, it's the change has been twofold. There's been a mindset change and there's been a schematic change. The mindset shift has been, hey, every single possession, we are not letting you off the hook. Now, there's been certain times throughout the game where they'll shoot a three early, of course, yeah. But you can tell that the identity and that there's been this concerted effort to get to the paint first. That's not always through a paint touch or a post entry, but can we just say, man, we are putting pressure on you regardless of if you pressure us in the backcourt, if you come at us in the half court. I mean, that is what we are doing, period. Now, the schematic change is that I think the scheme has been a little bit more deliberate. They have proper spacing. And when I say proper spacing, that comes down to who is spacing where. And there was a great like all 22 look that they did in Madison Square Garden when Marcus was isolating up top. They happened to do it during the game, like almost like when you shift on NBA Live or NBA 2K and you shift the view. And it was a perfect look because you had Marcus dribbling the ball up top. And the change that they've made is that they're now putting Coleman Hawkins in the corner and Ty Rogers is in the corner. So if those two guys are up on the wing, which a lot of times you want to enter it to Coleman Hawkins and have him play as this hub, which they still do at times. But hey, if we space Coleman to the corner, now if the two guys on the wings are Terrence Shannon and Luke Goody, those gaps are a little wider. Mm-hmm. And now these guys can operate and vice versa, right? Terrence Shannon has the ball. Marcus Damask is spacing on the wing. So where they've put these guys is equally as important to just simply as opposed to just like having spacing. And then the other thing that I'll mention too is they've been very, you can tell, we'll break it down on the film, of course, but they've been very deliberate with the pieces that they have and what they want to run. So instead of just doing, hey, they did some zoom action stuff where they'll enter it to Coleman, guy cuts over the top, sets a down screen into a handoff. That stuff is good and they'll still run some of that, but they're implementing some more like roll replace actions. So I know this is video, so I'm sure. And if anyone's listening on a podcast, I'm going to try to break this down as the best that I can. But picture, you know, you have your action that you go to initiate the offense, and then eventually it is a Coleman Hawkins. You have Terrence Shannon in the right corner, okay? Coleman Hawkins comes up and sets a screen for Marcus Damask to come off with his right hand. As he's coming off with his right hand, Terrence has now made his way under the basket, and there's a roll replace action. So we talked about Coleman weeks ago. We're like, Coleman needs to start sprinting out of, not just popping every time, sprinting on the rolls. They're doing that. Mm-hmm. Coleman is rolling to the basket, and simultaneously, as he rolls, Terrence is coming up to the top of the key. So picture Marcus Damask off with his right hand, Coleman rolling, Terrence coming off the roll replace. When you throw back, you may have Coleman on the roll, but when you throw back to Terrence, what's Terrence doing? He's catching it, and it's a right hand, it's a left hand drive on the single side with you know, maybe it's Goody in that corner.
Yeah,
that's the shift that needs to happen, because sometimes they have Rogers in that corner, and the tag man is way too far into the paint. So if they put a shooter into that paint, now you got Terrence, option to Terrence, okay, or that low tag man is worried about the roll. And then they're also worried about chasing Terrence, and it's going to free up that skip pass to the other side. So you see where I'm going here. There are just so many options to play out of it, and you have guys that can make sound decisions too. And then they have, you know, when they really want to simplify things, which is what they're doing too, it doesn't have to be complex. When they simplify things, I mean, some of those baskets were just dribble the ball up the floor, use your body, and score.
Right. Yeah, just like, you're bigger.
I put some stuff into the film, but I'm also like, I don't need to like analyze this too deep. This is a guy who has a size advantage and is putting you on his hip and going and scoring.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's how simple it has to be. But the other action that they're running too is kind of this pistol action where you'll see if Marcus Damask is dribbling up the left side of the floor, and they did this and they like a matchup. You got, I think, Greenlee for FAU guarding Justin Harmon. Justin Harmon comes up and sets a pistol screen from the corner, right? I'm dribbling up to the left wing. Now he comes up and sets almost like a reverse ball screen, gets that switch, and hey, it's clear out. Mm-hmm. Back down, let's go. And that is what they've been trying to work towards. Now they're doing it. Now how disciplined can you be in a ruckus environment in Knoxville, and can you stay can you stay the course, right? And if they do that, they're going to be a really efficient offense, because they're going to be shooting less threes and they're getting way more shots around the hoop.
They were really disciplined with that. I thought they were really disciplined. And of course, like Brad Underwood talked about, booty ball, he's got a booty ball guy. Maybe multiple if Ty Rogers can improve his game, Justin Harmon, if he gets smaller guys on him. But Coleman Hawkins' impact the last two games, I think, has been so apparent, Mike. I know FAU scored 89 points, but when he's on the court, the defense is just different. Vlad Golden's a tough matchup, but what have you seen? What is his impact? What has played out the last two games with Coleman back?
We've been talking about this for years, man. I know it's not always perfect with Coleman. there's some things that can be frustrating. All of us can probably say that. But no player is perfect. And I think I put out the clip on Twitter yesterday. You can stick around for the film room because it's in there as well. But I just wanted to highlight those are the little IQ things that he does. An early box out on Vlad Golden to steal a possession, make two free throws, and that pretty much put the game away. And then he has all these little things he's doing offensively and defense. He's a kind of around the fringes guy, mm-hmm. but you need that type of guy. That guy is like the glue to your team. And he allows you to play a certain way. When I talk about spacing Coleman to the corner, Coleman hasn't been shooting it particularly well, but there's still somewhat of a threat there. He's a guy that's hit six threes in a game before, right. six, seven threes in a game before. If you stick Dane in that corner, that guy's planted right in the middle of the paint. So that's what you can do with Coleman. And then I want to point out the growth from Coleman as well. He is starting to recognize a little bit of who he is. I think Coleman's a good shooter. They haven't fallen this year, but he hits a massive, 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 massive three to make it 89-84. They come back and hit one, 89-87, and Damascus comes off with his right hand and gets that same exact look, throwback to Coleman. Last year, or maybe 2 years ago, Coleman shoots that again. And it wasn't a clean catch. The pass was a little bit low, and he was still able to just say, hey, time, situation, let's go into a dribble handoff. And that possession ended up playing out, and it led to him getting that offensive rebound and the foul. Mm-hmm. And so those are the things that you just love from him. And Terrence Shannon was a massive it was a massive deal that Terrence Shannon came back this year. There's no question. But there's part of the reason why everybody was so fired up that Coleman was coming back too, because Coleman helps Terrence. I mean, he helps this team so much. I'm excited for him to get fully healthy as well. I think he's battling a little bit out there, but that's what you want to see from a guy that has been around the block and is willing to sacrifice a bit for his team.
Domas settled into his role. We know Guerrier seems really comfortable in his role. Wasn't a great game against FAU, but the other emerging storyline here is Justin Harmon on the East Coast. Two games, 42 minutes, 17 points, Mike, and he did it efficiently, making all three of his threes. That's not going to continue to happen, but like, he looks settled in. How do you see that?
Well, we talked about an emergence from either Harmon or Dragibs. Like, someone had to do it. Yeah. Dragibs, Lawhorn, Harmon, it had to be someone. And it's been Justin. And you mentioned settling into his role. This is a new role for Justin Harmon. Yeah. I'm not sure Justin Harmon has literally ever played this type of role in his life. And you could see that early in the season. It's kind of hesitant. Where do I go? Usually I kind of have the ball in my hands, and it's easier to kind of dictate where you're going to be on the floor possession by possession. Now he's corner, space, relocate threes, corner threes, pursuit on the offensive glass, be a pest defensively. He seems to be settling into that. And you could say this for Quincy and Justin. I watch them. I'm not there. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not there at shoot around. Their attitude is just
phenomenal.
I watched last year, right? And like, last year was, oh, look at these guys that are even keel. And then it was like, early season, like, are you even keel, or are you just like kind of like apathetic, or I don't know what the
body language is definitely different now when you win two games like this. I mean, we'll see if they lose a game and they have a bad stretch. That's kind of when it turned last year, but yeah, you can read.
But I'll say this. Harmon, I think, was maybe dealing with a different type of role. I'm not saying he had bad body language early on. He looked a little bit more like quiet on the bench early in the season. Quincy has not changed at all.
No.
Bad shooting. You know, he just looks like a ball of joy out there. And that does so much, because we know that Coleman can be kind of like high strung sometimes in games. And like, Quincy just seems to kind of level him out a little bit. And that's huge. And I think this is the role, when you look at Harmon, this is the role we kind of envisioned for him. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this in the offseason. It's like, hey, you're a come in off the bench. Don't think you're not a multi-read guy. You're a single read. And that's not a bad thing. Catch and shoot, opportunistic attacks, pesky on the offensive glass, and a pest on defense. that's your role, and he's figuring that out. And if he's consistent with that, and he doesn't get the Pat Riley disease of more, where you're like, I did this, now I need this. Like if guys stay consistent with their roles, man, this team's gonna do some things for sure.
Speaking of roles, what do you think the coaching staff is telling Dane Danger right now after a couple struggles, especially against FAU?
It's tough, right? Because we've seen success from Dane. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, this is a really good Illinois basketball team. And this happens everywhere you go on elite teams. There's someone that always, I'm talking always, pretty much 100% of the time, there's someone that always is going to feel like, I could probably be getting more minutes, or man, I'm not getting the opportunity, or hey, my performance is I can't get into a rhythm because I'm not playing enough, and that's why I'm not performing in these stretches, these 11 minutes that he had at FAU. Yeah. It just, there was some good in there. It wasn't all bad, but just little things to where we talk about the, you know, he kind of gets this, I don't know, like you pull your hair out a little bit because it's like, he wants to make things happen the second he gets the ball in the post. I'll show it in the film, but the second the ball got entered to him, this FAU assistant coach stands up and points at the guy ball side and is like, go, run at it, run at it. Like he's going to put the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
And he goes and he dribbles and he tries to spin and it ends up being a turnover. And, you know, and then even in another turnover he had in the first half, he caught it at the elbow. He had a guy in the slot right in front of him, and then he had a guy in the corner. Like, there was no spacing for him to operate, and he's still, like, quick spin, dribble into the crowded side. And so just – it's hard. I can't even sit here and be like, man, Dane, come in and be perfect, because it's an imperfect situation because
right.
you aren't getting as many minutes, so it's hard to get in a rhythm. And it's just less is more. With him, and but how you talk through that, or I don't know, you're winning, and it's like if you've developed a good culture and you have good guys in that locker room, that makes it a little bit easier for a guy like that to swallow swallow that. And I know I see him on the bench and he seems to be standing up, and I see him in the locker room post game and all that. Now there are a lot of other hours that are spent outside of right. the bench and the locker room, but you hope that he's seeing the big picture and understanding, man, this is a team that has a chance to do a lot of things this year, some big things, and he has a chance to be a part of that. It may not be as big as he thought, but still a chance to be a part of it. And also, if things break down and he's counted on, you still got to be ready.
It reminds me, Mike, of junior year Georgie.
Like, yeah.
All of a sudden, Kofi and Grandison are getting all those minutes, but there's going to be games they need him. Like Coleman's going to be in foul trouble, or, you know, maybe Coleman's hurting or not playing well. They're going to need Dane Danger, so he's got to be ready. And Georgie had some frustrating games, but also some really big games that we can remember against, what, Iowa, was it, in the Big Ten tournament? Like, so I feel like if he accepts that, like you're saying, you just got to be ready. You got to be locked in.
Well, I think Coleman's a great example of this. You know, Coleman's sophomore year, they, you know, they play Wisconsin pretty much like a month and a half maybe before they clinch the Big Ten title against Iowa. And Coleman Hawkins played 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. But he stayed ready, and then you play that game against Iowa to clinch, and he plays 37 minutes and has 9 points and 10 rebounds.
Yeah.
So you have a guy that you can potentially lean on in that situation. Or if you're Coleman, you're like pulling him aside. Hey, man, just be ready. And things just work out. I've never been in a situation where I'm like, hey, if you have a bad attitude or if you're upset with your role, if that tends to persist, things typically don't work out the way that you want them to work out. There's a bigger picture at hand, and you just kind of hope that Dane sees that and buys into that.
CBS Tonight, TV's hottest show, is Fire Country.
I'm not a hero.
I'm in orange for a reason.
They're taking 12 months off your sentence. You're free.
Lady.
With a special epic season finale.
Now that I'm out, I need something to get me up in the morning.
You are a firefighter.
Used to be.
That will be unforgettable.
In the name of your life's happiness, go get your girl.
She's getting married tomorrow.
Says, when do you let anything get in the way of what you want?
The Fire Country season finale, tonight, 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
Drag queens save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
You've heard us talk about home field apparel since the start of the season. There are a lot of collegiate apparel brands out there, but we wanted to partner with home field because their designs are the best out there. Some of Illini Enquirer's favorites are the basketball ringer tee, the rose tee, and the 1980s long sleeve with the script Illini. It's great. Be sure to check out homefieldapparel.com, filter by Illinois, and see what we're talking about. And our listeners get an exclusive deal using code Illini23. Using that code, Illini23, gets you 15% off your first order. We all know you're wearing Illini gear, so if you're in need of a refresh, we really think that you should check out Home Field Apparel, which has the best designs, and these shirts, guys, are really comfortable. Their designs are super unique, and a lot of thought goes into each concept. There's really nothing else on the market like what Home Field is doing. You can find them at homefieldapparel.com and use code Illini23 for 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com.
Ford Atlantic was actually pretty good in this game. That's what makes this win even more impressive. And Ford Atlantic, I mean, scored 89 points. It was the worst defensive efficiency of the year for Illinois. But, Mike, I thought they bothered FAU, especially early in this game. What did you make of the defensive performance?
You got a historical offensive performance from two of your best players, and it almost didn't matter. That was stunning. When you talk about how efficient Illinois was and what we know they're capable of defensively, and to look at that game and be like, it is 89-87 with a minute 57 left. This is insane. The thought of potentially wasting that performance, I don't even want to say wasting, but not being able to pull out a win, that would have been...
It would have been like Tennessee ruining a 37-point night from Dalton Kinnick against North Carolina, right?
100%. And also, it's just like... As hard as that would have been to swallow for Illinois, equally you had to tip your cap to FAU, man. I mean, that is a team that I would be shocked if they lost more than 5 games this year, and they've already lost 2.
Right.
So they have it everywhere. Their guard play and ability to shoot the ball, and they have one of the better bigs in certainly in mid-major basketball, but he's a high major player. I mean, he's a high major transfer in Golden. And so
it's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome, Mike. They've played 2 teams I can see in the Final Four.
Yeah, no question.
It's awesome.
Marquette and FAU, I think, are 2 teams that can make it there. Tennessee has a chance.
I was going to say they got one more coming.
Yeah, if things shake out the right way, that they can do it. And look, FAU, I say you held them to 1.03 points per possession because it was a high possession game. Everybody looks at you can look at the 89 points. That was a higher possession game than the Marquette game, and Marquette plays this like, feverish tempo. So that was FAU's third lowest, points per possession of the season, and Illinois did that and was still able to pull out that. I mean, Illinois was 1.25, and that this is still a really good FAU team defensively. So it's encouraging to see that this Illinois team can play a different type of styled game where it's like, hey, 164 possessions in a game and we can keep up.
That's a lot. Yeah.
You not only keep up, we can score almost 100 points. And granted, there was a very efficient 98 points, but that you didn't make 14 threes.
Right.
That was one of my takeaways from this game was if you told me that Illinois put up 98 points, told me in the beginning of the season, Illinois is going to put up 98 points against FAU in Madison Square Garden, I would have said, how many threes did they hit? Because just like the UCLA game last year, everybody's celebrating the UCLA game. I'm like, I don't think Terrence is going 8 for 9 from 3 the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I don't know if 15 for 21 is sustainable, right? Like, Domasic probably isn't going to score 33 again, but, Mike, the way they got it felt way different than UCLA or even Texas last year. Like that. So yeah. do you feel like this is a different kind of win than last year? Do we take more out of it? Should Illinois fans feel more encouraged about this one than the 2 huge wins they had last year?
It's a loaded question, and right. I'll give you a few different answers to that, or I'll take it in a few different directions. One, it's different because it felt like you were never out of it. You felt like you were out of it against UCLA and Texas last year. You happened to surge back and steal both of those games. You're down 15 to UCLA, you're down 12 to Texas. And that was like the story for that team throughout the year. It was like, well, here's Northwestern at home and down 19. All right, well, let's charge our way back again. It was exhausting.
Yeah.
And this game, right, like the where you are getting your looks is way more replicable than, you know, last year where it was like, hope we hit some threes.
Step back, Terrence.
yeah. Matthew Meyer, step back. Oh, okay, wow, that went in. Like, there were too many of those looks last year where it was like, okay, thank God. That, you know, Tuesday night was like, man, if they're patient enough, they won't get all those types of looks, but they'll get a lot of them, right. And they'll be able to be a very efficient offense. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, there were people calling in on radio after the game and stuff. Well, you know, this is what they did last year. I'm like, does it feel different to you?
Yes.
Watching this team and last year's team, does it feel different to you? Do you feel like when you're watching this team, as a viewer, is there a little bit more trust? Like, do you feel like, hey, late game, oh my, you're not like, I mean, FAU made it tough, obviously.
Sure.
But you're not sitting there going like, who's going to take the tough one? Who's going to take the tough shot? Who's going to potentially turn it over? Like, when the ball's in Marcus Damask's hands, Terrence Shannon's hands, you just feel like, ah, there's comfort there. There's comfort there. And to me, that's all you need to know. The difference between last year and this year is that you just have a little, you have more experience, mm-hmm. for sure. But you have guys that have been around the block, and they you can see it in their eyes, you can see it on their faces. Late game, there's no panic, and that's the difference.
Well, Mike, a hell of a start to December. 2-0 to start this thing. And now, hey, here's another one. Huge opportunity at Tennessee. Feels like this past week and a half has already been a success because of getting two. But now you have a chance to get greedy, man, and go steal another quad one, I would say quad one AA kind of win on the road here against Tennessee. So what do you think of this matchup, and what's this game mean for the Illini?
Yeah, well, I was interested to see how they – you know, reacted after the Rutgers win, playing against an FAU team that wants to just bully you and out-tough you. And that game was set up for you to come out there lethargic and be like, man, we're 1-0 in Big Ten play, got a big road win, and now we play this mid-major FAU. So that was encouraging. And now you got to do it again. And I think some of the things that you're hearing out of press conferences, Damask, Terrence Shannon, they won that game on Tuesday night, but it wasn't like it was – their Super Bowl. And I think they truly are like, I think Damask said it. He's like, I didn't come here. We're not playing this season just to beat FAU. Mm-hmm. And now you go to Tennessee and another road environment. That's a really tough place to play in Knoxville. It just is. We've seen SEC teams just struggle there constantly. And this is a team that's battle tested. I mean, they have the fifth best strength of schedule in the country, and when you look at who they've played, I mean, they've played the likes of Wisconsin. I mean, they look at Wisconsin right now. This is a team that beat Wisconsin by 10 at the Kohl Center, mm-hmm. and you know, and then you've played Syracuse, you've played Purdue, you've played Kansas, you've played North Carolina. I mean, geez, they have seen it all, and they're only nine. This is their ninth game of the season. And they play, they are so physical. And I'm not breaking any news. We know that's how Tennessee plays. But if you're Tennessee, I said this a couple of weeks ago. I was like, shoot, if I was Tennessee, I would absolutely be as physical as possible with this team to try to send them to the free throw line. Now you're like 18 for 20. Okay. They've showed that they can knock down some free throws. So, and I think you're still going to need to if you're Illinois. I think you're going to spend some time in the bonus in this game. But it's interesting seeing the contrast. There's a couple teams, and we'll talk about some Big Ten teams as well, but the contrast in Tennessee's style. They've played, you know, high major opponents. They've been pretty up tempo offensively, which is not common for them. They're 25th nationally offensively in tempo. Last year they were 246. Now defensively, they are still, you know, knock down, drag out. But like, you're gonna have to be disciplined, like we talk about, and try to still generate those good looks. But I'm looking at Ziegler, who is a small guard. If you're Terrence Shannon, Marcus Damask, it's once again, can we go matchup hunting again? Mm-hmm. Can we find these matchups? If it Dalton Connect, how's that ankle? Let's test it. Get him in ball screens. Go off the deck. You know, there's ways to attack this team, but again, it just comes back to being disciplined.
You brought up Wisconsin. Since their back-to-back losses to Tennessee and Providence, they've won six straight, including Virginia, SMU on neutral site, then Marquette at home. Really impressive win, won by 11. And then Michigan State, they won by 13. What do you make of that Badgers team? Feels like them and Illinois kind of putting themselves in that at least second tier of contenders that can maybe push or make Purdue sweat a little bit.
Well, they're doing it in a slightly different way than they've done in previous years. I think AJ Storr was a really big pickup for them. And I don't know what's going on with Connor Cision. I don't know. That to go to be 10 a game and all freshmen, and now you're playing like four total minutes in the last two games. That's maybe he's injured. I have no idea. I don't want to speculate, but AJ Storr was such a big pickup because it felt like that's not the type of guy that they get. I feel like they haven't had a like kind of a go-to scoring two guard since like Michael Finley. And now you look at what they've done against high major teams. They have 10 plus offensive rebounds in every single high major game they've played. They had 20 against Virginia. Wisconsin, who is 330 plus in the country in offensive rebound last year. So maybe it's like it's a more concerted effort to say, hey, we know we play a slower tempo, but let's still try to steal some offensively. Cause now it's like, you're hoping to be one and done with Wisconsin because of how much they test you defensively with running, using that shot clock. And now they're getting offensive rebounds and saying, kick it out. Let's run it back. So there's times you're playing defense for 50 straight seconds against Wisconsin because they're getting more back. And then the last thing I'll mention about Wisconsin, they are turning teams over this year. They're turning teams over. Yeah. Klesmit and Storr, like they're getting into passing lanes, they're getting into you. And that has not been a staple for Wisconsin. Wisconsin's taken care of the ball over the years, and they're like 90th in the country this year in taking care of the ball. But the flip side is they're getting more back on the defensive end. So, man, and they've got skill offensively. Crowell can step out, and he's a skilled big man. So not a lot of people were high on Wisconsin. They had a disappointing finish to the year last year, but here they are again, like the Grim Reaper.
That's right. It's way too early to be thinking about this, but we can do it. At Wisconsin, March 2nd, home against Purdue, March 5th. That feels like it's going to be some big games, and you finish the Big Ten season at Iowa. Which team do you trust the most to bounce back? Michigan, which through a couple games felt like, oh, maybe this team is good because they got some talent. Maryland, I know they beat Penn State in overtime. That was not a very impressive game. Or Michigan State. Like of those three teams, Michigan, Maryland, Michigan State, who do you think bounces back?
Michigan, Maryland, and Michigan State.
Yeah.
If you threw Indiana in there, I know they're 2-0 right now in conference. I would say Indiana because I think they do defensively. But, I mean, I'll probably go Michigan State. You know how I felt about them.
Yeah, you were very skeptical of them.
Top five in the country was insane. And yes. It probably did them a disservice too. You lost your best player in Joey Hauser. I don't care what anyone says. Joey Hauser was their best player. 45% from three, leading rebounder, floor spacer. You're a ball screen team. I've said it a million times before.
He made AJ Hogard so much better, right? Like,
yeah, and there's more space to operate for those guys and Tyson Walker to operate in the mid-range game. But look, they were overrated. They're eventually going to be underrated. Mm-hmm. That's just what's going to happen. Now, I said going into the year, could they shoot the ball well enough to, you know, because they shot well last year and that helped in a lot of different areas. They didn't finish stuff around the rim very well. They were last in the conference in field goals around the rim. And the same things played out this year. They're just not shooting it well. And, you know, like defensively, I trust them more defensively than those other teams. So, I mean, Michigan is horrendous defensively. They really are. And teams are shooting almost 40% from three on them. And that's not just like, hey, teams are making shots on us. That tells me you can't guard off the dribble because that's what's leading to more quality looks. So, yeah, I mean, I expect Michigan State to bounce back. Yeah, they do this every year. You know, they'll drop a few in non-conference, and then you'll underestimate them, and then you're like, oh, well, they might get a double bye for the Big Ten tournament.
And then they're the most dangerous seven seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then we'll overrate them again going into the next season. So, Michigan State would be my team to bounce back for sure.
What do you make of Indiana? 7-1. They're 2-0 in Big Ten play, Mike. I still don't buy them, but Khalil Ware's been better than I expected. Like he's really improved. I got to give Mike Woodson a lot of credit. And that front court's a bear. I just don't know if they can have the guard play to really contend here. But they're a little better than I thought.
No, they are, and then their front court's really good.
Yeah,
it is. And Khalil Ware, just coming into the season, the main thing was, is he going to play hard?
Yeah,
because the talent was always there. You know, he's really skilled as well. But what was Mike Woodson going to get out of him? Because Dana Altman was just kind of like, take him. Fine. We don't want him anymore. And then maybe that lights a fire under a kid like that who was like a top 15 projected guy last year and has slid a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I think you look at Indiana, they've been solid defensively. Offensively, they're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in America, and part of that is point guard play. They can't generate enough good ones. But if their bigs end up forcing more double teams, you know, now maybe you're getting kickouts that lead to more high quality shots, but you know, they're 22nd in the country in 2-point field goal percentage. They're finishing around the rim. They've shot it relatively well from the free throw line. I think they're 70%, but they're going to the free throw line a ton. Like their percentage of free throw attempts to field goal attempts, I think is 12th nationally. So they're getting there, and they play a physical style of basketball, and they're also just kind of abandoning the three, which is similar to Illinois. Not abandoning it, but they just I think they're like 360th in the country. Indiana is in 3-point attempt to field goal attempt. So they're starting to kind of figure out who they are, and I don't think it's gonna they could end up being an NCAA tournament team, like a potentially like a 9-ish or a first four type of team. But yeah, if you don't have your front court in order, that's a team that can give you some fits. And if you know Mike Woodson, he's going to have his team playing hard for sure.
Well, this was fun, Mike. A huge game, huge win for Illinois. Two feel-good wins on the East Coast, and we'll see if they can go down south to Tennessee and get another one. Because Mike, if they win that one, they might be a top 10 team in the country next week.
I would guess they would be. They would be for sure.
Michael Tuip, thanks as always, man.
All right, man. Take care.
Great stuff as always from Michael Tuip. He is the goods. And if you need more Michael Tuip in your life, which why wouldn't you? Go check out our film room. He broke down this game in detail. It was a bit longer of a film room, but it is worth it. He broke down a lot about the offense and why it was so efficient. What got Marcus Dumas going. But what he's seen schematically over the last couple games that's changed as well, I thought was really educational. So if you want to know more about Illini basketball and how this all works and what you're actually watching and why these things are happening, Michael Tuip's film rooms are so good. Jay Layman does it during the football season as well. So if you're not a VIP member, sign up. It's $1 for your first month of VIP access. You can go check that out. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to all our YouTube community. You guys have been awesome. If you're not part of that, go follow us on YouTube. Subscribe. Hit the notifications bell. Like those videos. Really helps us out. We're trying to do more and more on that video side of things as well. And as always, we're keeping up on Illini football, transfer portal recruiting, Joey Wagner covering the heck out of Illini women's basketball, and all three of us, Wagner, Piper, and I, heading down to Knoxville, Tennessee for another huge potential matchup that if Illinois wins, you're going to have a top 10 team in the country. And by the way, to leave you with this, I do appreciate the national perspective sometimes, and it's something I've been talking about, you know, the last couple of years, because I understand the angst of not making the NCAA tournament, but I thought Matt Norlander hit on it really, really well in his follow-up to the Jimmy V Classic of just how relevant Illinois basketball has become under Brad Underwood. Again, I know there's that, yeah, but you haven't made the tournament. And I wrote a column about this early in the year, like what Brad Underwood has done to turn this program from, you know, a Big Ten bottom half team. A lot of times they're playing on Wednesday of the Big Ten tournament. I kept saying I would miss Graham Crouch every year. He covers Michigan State, one of the guys I really respect, covering the beat in the, you know, this entire league. I'd rarely see him at the Big Ten tournament for a long stretch of years because Michigan State would get the double bye. Illinois would be out on Wednesday or Thursday. Like, Illinois is constantly finishing top five. They are constantly, mostly, ranked under Brad Underwood. And they've had some huge wins. And they're playing the Jimmy V Classic 3 out of 4 years. And listen, I get it. Having that extra weekend in March and having that run, it's important. Of course it is. But there's also a lot of good happening. And the fact that you get players like Terrence Shannon, Io DeSumo, and Kofi Coburn to stick around longer than you expect, Coleman Hawkins to stick around longer than you expect. I know there's transfers out, but boy, Illinois has really done well in the transfer portal. And it's worked out pretty well for them. So I think this could be another really, really good year, and I just don't think we should overlook the good that has happened, even if you want that longer run in March as well. All right, that's what I'll leave you with. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Everyone is talking about IF.
I'm going to go on a limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting.
IF. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.